But now it's time for Bathrobe's Piers Broadsides, the Sunday edition. Today is January 26th. I'm 15 minutes late. Thank my car, but I'm glad to be here. I'm Robert Norris. Stay with us.
Sometimes I feel the need to ask my landlord, just exactly when did God die and how'd you get in the will? And why is it that you own 7 homes and I own none? And for some reason that means you get to rob me on the first of every month. Upon further investigation, I find that land acquisition is just a result of genocide and war. And if we uphold the institution of land ownership, we are saying it's acceptable to kill people just to take away the land, to take their land. Rent is just a scam. Pretty simple equation. There's 99 people like you for every cop, landlord, and politician. And if we learn to just say no, there'd be no more taxes, no more work, and we'd all own our own homes. We are all controlled. We are all controlled. We are all controlled. We are all controlled by fear. If you don't go to work every day, if you don't pay your rent every month, if you don't pay your taxes every year, if you don't bow down to our fear, you will starve in the street, you will freeze in the street, you will die in the street, you will die in the street, you will die alone. Pretty simple equation. It's all about restitution. It's all about reparations. It's all about revolution. My life is mine. My time is mine. My work is mine, and I don't work for you anymore. My life is mine. My time is mine. Your house is mine, and I don't pay you rent anymore. My life is mine. My time is mine. My money is mine, and I will pay taxes to fund your fucking war. To pay for your war. To pay for your war. Situations like these make me fall to my knees. I cannot comprehend what you don't understand. Situations like these make me fall to my knees. I cannot comprehend what you don't understand. Situations like these make me fall to my knees. A simple matter of greed, do you understand? Situations like these make me fall to my knees. It's a simple matter of greed. Rent is just a scam. And if we really believe it's okay to kill someone, just to take their shit. Then I'm gonna go down to the pawn shop and buy myself a handgun, 'cause my landlord's on the top of the list. Yeah! My landlord is on the top of the list. Situations like these make me fall to my knees. I cannot comprehend what you don't understand. Situations like these make me fall to my knees. I cannot comprehend what you don't understand. Situations like these make me fall to my knees. It's a simple matter of greed, do you understand? Situations like these make me fall to my knees. It's a simple matter of greed. Rent is just a scam. The Indians lost, and this is the cause. The Indians lost, rent is the cause. The Indians lost, and this is the cause. The Indians lost.
And that was 15 from their album Survivor Landlord, a frequent introducer to this show. I'm Bathroom Spear, Robert Norris. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And that is the phone. Hi, you're on the air with Free Radio.
Hey, Bathroom Spear, Broadsides.
Yes.
I had an experience this morning.
Oh-ho.
With someone who I considered to be pretty homophobic.
Uh-huh.
Because he began talking about how he can't stand homosexual men because as soon as he starts to... I guess as soon as he finds out that they're homosexual, all he can do is envision them giving each other head or possibly giving him head, probably, is what his issue is. But he mm-hmm. was, like, freaking out.
Right.
And I was, like, thinking, is that not kind of, like, his problem? Because when I look at people, regardless of their gender or regardless of their sexual orientation, I don't immediately think of what they do in the bedroom.
No, nor do I, actually.
I mean, isn't that kind of sick?
Well, it is, and it's a sickness we all have, particularly men, that is, in society, many men, anyway. I mean, I know I have it. You know, it's accentuated in men's rooms, for example, for some of us who are...
You mean homophobia?
Or apprehensive about our own sexuality.
Uh-huh.
Homophobia. I mean, it's also fear of your own impulses and desires. And so, yeah, I think, you know, it's appropriate to ask the person, you know, is there any objective basis? Has somebody recently approached you, or did you have... I mean, were you...
I was stuck. I'm in a working environment with this guy.
Oh, I see.
And I basically told him that... I mean, I told my coworker that in the future, I'm not going to be able to work with him. Because to have someone sit there and say that, you know... And then, to top it off, he went and he decided to tell me, you know, that, well, it sounds like you like... lesbians, gay men, you know, faggots, I guess is probably the word he used.
Mm-hmm.
Faggots, probably dykes. And then he said transvestites and transsexuals and all those kind of queer people and child molesters.
And child molesters.
And,
yeah,
you know, he's
yeah.
had to throw in child molesters mm-hmm. as if they are all child molesters. But you know who the most,
right.
the biggest child molester is a heterosexual male.
Right. Well, you know, I don't think you should have to move from your job position because of commentary that he's making. I mean, unless. It doesn't sound like the commentary is relevant to the job, for one thing.
Oh, no, it's not at all.
I mean, it seems appropriate to say to him, look, you're interfering with my ability to do my work. You know, if you want to discuss these things with some people, perhaps it's appropriate for you to talk to somebody else who's more in tune with your way of thinking, you know?
It's just amazing. I can't imagine, you know, that... I don't even think it's legal for him to do that. I think that that's called, like, sexual harassment or something.
Well, if you...
Especially
you know,
since
if
I identify
if
as
If you
lesbian.
Were gay and he was saying that to you...
I'm
yes,
lesbian.
So,
I identify
well, then,
as lesbian.
Then you are being sexually harassed, it sounds like. And it's appropriate for you to tell him to put a lid on it or just go straight to, you know, the appropriate agency, whether it's the boss or an independent agency. You know, that's the thing to do.
I also have one other question for you about another...
Again, I don't speak out of experience. I haven't filed such complaints. That's
right.
my offhand thought.
Right.
Uh-huh.
You deal mostly with homeless issues, which homelessness affects
well,
everyone.
Well, homophobia is an issue among homeless people,
right.
too. You know,
it affects everyone.
Right.
You know, homosexuals are homeless just as much as straight people, and... You know, people
right, and they
different.
Suffer double and triple discrimination there, too, because if they're, you know, depending on with their gender and their color and all that stuff.
Right, so. Right. The other thing that I wanted to ask you about was, have you heard of that Tom Likas guy?
Tom Likas.
He's like a talk show radio host.
Maybe somewhere, but I'm not a great talk show tuner-inner, but occasionally I listen.
Well,
I don't know that particular one.
I checked him out on MediaWatch.com, Ann Simonton's website,
uh-huh.
and I saw some really offensive stuff to the point that this morning when I woke up, I was constantly thinking about, like, what he had said on the air. And it was basically, he was talking about how women who are sexually abused as children end up being maybe more easy to get into bed, maybe better in bed because of the abuse and all this stuff. And it was really disturbing to hear that. And I was just thinking that maybe instead of, I mean, one of the things that I was thinking about when I read it was he was definitely focusing on women,
mm-hmm.
and that this is something that, like, somehow benefits women for them to be abused.
Yeah, it benefits men who want to control women, I would say.
Well, he was saying, you know, that it makes it better because they're better in bed and they're easier to get in bed, and, like, that's better for, right, for him to get, but, you know, somehow he's saying that women being molested makes it better for men and women because they get, you know, to benefit from this abuse. But
well, men who are tortured are probably easier to get in bed too, if that's what the torturer wants. But, you know, what it's weird shit talking
right.
like
well,
that.
Well, see, the weird thing I was thinking about it is, you know, he seems pretty, I mean, there was another part where he was talking about how men like to be with younger women because they're, like, you know, thinking, yeah, when I was 20 years old, you were 3 or you were 7 or whatever, right? So this is really cool because I'm fucking you now, and when you were, you know, when I was 20 or married to my last wife, you were 7 years old. You know, it's like, that's really sick to me. And he was, like, saying all this stuff, and then I started thinking, you know, he seems pretty much pretty sexualized himself, and I just wonder, does, you know, in his theory, would that mean that men that are sexually abused are better sexual partners and are easier to get in bed?
I wouldn't even... See, the problem is giving this kind of any kind of credibility. I mean, I...
it would feed in, I think he... Because, of course, he's probably homophobic, so it would be like saying, well, obviously, Tom, have you been molested? Because you're really obsessed with sex.
He's probably homophobic as well as afraid of dominant women. So,
right.
I mean,
but
yeah,
I don't know. I just thought that was fucking weird.
Yeah, well, to many it is, and to some they think that that's the cat's meow. And, you know, that's, you know.
What do you think of that?
I think, to me, it is, you know, well, it would be a responsibility and to some extent a turn off to find that someone has been sexually molested because regardless of their age, I mean, if you're talking about my personal relationship with people, I would worry, you know, that I would bear a greater responsibility for hurting that person if I had contact with them. I'd have to be extra careful, you know, I'd wonder if I had the skills to deal with that situation. So, I mean, that would be my reaction if that came up. As for the idea that, you know, it's easier to get people in bed who are sexually abused as children, I have no idea if that's true or not. If it is, obviously, it sounds like it's abusive behavior, you know. I mean, it sounds like you're preying on someone who you're not going to get any kind of reciprocal relationship from. You'll get some sort of frightened or, you know, conditioned response from, and it's just, as you say, sick.
It is. I'm really glad that you had the response that you had, because I was really disturbed by it, and I know that in the past we haven't agreed. I mean, obviously we don't agree on everything, but I am
not a lesbian at this time, but nonetheless.
I know, okay. Just thank you very much for fucking helping me out with that.
Sure, no problem. Again, it's just my opinion, you know. I mean, I'm not the most enlightened person in the world, as you know, so
yeah,
you might want to ask some other folks.
I know for me it's difficult not to place all men in the perpetrator category,
mm-hmm.
and to see all men as capable, if not willing, to commit crimes against myself as a woman and children. But when I have, you know, men saying things to me that are that contradict that, it helps me work through my own stereotypes that I've put up and my own sexism that I'm struggling with.
Well,
so
good.
Thank you very much. And if you want to get tripped out, you should check out that website, MediaWatch.com.
The other person you might want to call, you probably know Ann Simonton's show on Tuesday.
Yes.
Media Watch, she would probably have some interesting insights into this issue. I'm sure that it's come up as a topic at different times.
I probably will be calling her in, but I just couldn't wait today, and I heard you on, and I wanted to see what you had to say. Maybe if there's any callers out there who have anything to add, that would be cool.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Alrighty.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bathrobe Piers, Broadside.
Hey. Bye-bye. And this is Bathrobe Piers, Broadsides. As the caller stated, normally and generally we cover topics around poverty and homelessness, but this is also an open line. If you have other concerns that you feel are very, very pressing, bring them up if you need to. Today we got numerous items on the agenda. I've learned from my attorney in Hawaii that he and a local assistant are going to be filing this lawsuit against the police department, Sergeant Baker, Matisse Selman, City of Santa Cruz, probably some other police officers, who knows, maybe a couple of other parties around the issue of it's essentially a false arrest that happened in front of Sushi Now, what was Alibaba's Cafe, what is now the Cafe Campesino and the New Leaf Market at the Forbidden Fence way back in January of a year ago, 2002. You may remember, I've talked about this issue before on the air, I was doing a table trying to save Hippie Planter, as we used to call it then, where people would sit around the one of the three or four big planters on the mall where you can actually sit. It's waist high, or used to be able to sit. You still can if you are a customer or if they are ignoring you, which occasionally happens, apparently more so now that Alibaba's Cafe is gone, apparently. Or if Matisse Selman is not there. Although, I don't know, Matisse may have adopted a more laissez-faire attitude. Anyway, I was at a table distributing literature asking for the boycott of those three places after attempted negotiations with them had failed. I'd asked them to stop. They'd moved in essentially a three-day blitz to get the entire area walled off, as it's now walled off with planters and fences, and only the preserve of the customers there. And that had been done, and the fence hadn't been put up, but I was encouraging the community to resist this, to oppose it, to boycott the stores that had initiated it and were supporting it and benefiting from it, and to send in letters to various messages, email, phone, and so forth, to city council, downtown association, and tell the businesses that they would love to be local patrons. I was a major patron of Sushi Now in the old days. I really liked Sushi Now. I still like Matisse as a person. Don't like some of his behavior, but here I am in court, with him. And the reason for that has to do with the fact that it looks like a conspiracy to violate civil rights, which he tried again a couple of weeks ago when we set up a table in one of the few remaining legal spots near his business. And he rushed over and asked us to move it, and then he called the police, apparently. And they came and grumbled and mumbled that they had to agree we were in a legal place. Now, this was also the case a year ago when I had this table up, but I was nonetheless arrested by Sergeant Baker after extensive police surveillance and videoing for several days and the involvement of numerous high-level police officials. And I was put in handcuffs, taken to the police station. Another woman was put in handcuffs, and I think she was taken to jail. I'm not sure. That was Zoe Einbinder, and she's not a part of the lawsuit. She wants out of all this. But I actually, though it may seem that I'm all into litigious lawsuits against the police department and so forth, and I got a smear job by the San Jose Mercury News' Ken McLaughlin in the last issue when they closed the police review board at the city council. We were talking about that last show, and I spoke up against, sarcastically, supporting their closure, actually opposing it. Claims are that I'm some sort of frivolous, endless, non-stop critic of the police department on all occasions. And it is true, my voice is loud on a number of occasions, and I am concerned about police abuses. I don't spend a lot of time commending the police department, though I have, and on occasion commended them. But I also think it's important to be fair and factual about what you say. Otherwise, what's the point? I mean, it's just some sort of self-indulgent ranting and raving. So, The fact is that this is actually the second federal lawsuit that I've ever filed. And the only reason I filed it was because attorneys came to me and said they wanted to file it. They thought it was an important issue. To me, a lawsuit is a huge deal. Takes a lot of time. You don't usually get much out of it. Someone's going to have to pay for it. And, I wasn't particularly interested in paying for that. I don't want to pay lawyers. I don't want to pay legal fees. I'd rather, if I need to lend money to friends and deal with day-to-day living and, buy chocolate sundaes and banana splits or whatever it is that my particular vice of the moment is. And so I'm not terribly excited about the legal system. On the other hand, some jurisdictions have had some success in stopping abuses against homeless people through systematic legal opposition. Most obvious, of course, is stuff like the Lawson decision down in Southern California in 1982 that threw out all the vagrancy laws, the loitering laws, nationwide. It was a black guy with dreads who was constantly followed by police and asked for ID repeatedly and frivolously, and he refused to give it, and they arrested him finally, and then he took it all the way to the Supreme Court, and he ruled the law they were using, the vagrancy, you have to identify yourself and prove you are, visible means of support. I actually don't have the law in front of me, so I'm not quite sure of this specifically, but generally it was vagrancy and loitering laws were thrown out, so that was effective as a court action. Other court actions have been effective were the Pottinger decision in Miami, Florida. In that city, the federal court under Clyde Atkins found that mass arrests of homeless people for no sleeping laws was a violation of basic constitutional rights, given that there were no legal shelter areas for them to go, or for the overwhelming majority of them to go, which is just like in Santa Cruz, where we have only 160 places tonight on the floor of the armory, as long as we don't go to war, of course, and which is looking very problematic, and the churches, a couple of churches every night, sometimes three. So the Pottinger decision found that the police have to set up safe zones and I guess the final decision, they went through safe zones that for a while, then they decided, the courts came to a settlement, I think it was the ACLU, homeless people, different activists and social service agencies, and the police department of the city came to a settlement which said that a police officer, before she or he arrests or even stops a homeless person for a so-called, let me get this right, it's not a survival misdemeanor, but it's a misdemeanor that involves homeless survival, such as going to the bathroom when there's no bathrooms open outside, camping, lighting a fire against the cold, being naked at some point because you have to change your clothes. This kind of stuff is survival-related misdemeanors. And therefore, there is a not just an argument that you can take it to court and argue the necessity defense, which you can, that is to say that you violated the law, yes, but you had a greater necessity to do it. You did it to prevent a greater evil, and that's been successful in Santa Barbara and Albany, and at least in one case in Sacramento. But this was a finding by the court broadly that there was such a significant necessity that the police officer, before she or he approached an individual with concern about a misdemeanor, a survival-related misdemeanor, had to find out if there was a shelter space available and offer it to that person. And then if that person refused, then they could charge the person. So it's not, of course, a catch-all. I mean, it's not a cure-all, I should say. It doesn't really, it allows police to be abusive by setting aside some shelter spaces sort of as chips and running around and then targeting certain individuals and demanding that they either go into shelter or get arrested. But for the majority of people who are out there who don't have shelter spaces, it seemed to provide, and I haven't gotten the latest update from the last year. I talked to an ACLU member about a year and a half ago about this, who was a part of that lawsuit. He said it was working. And then also homeless people got, a couple $100,000, and attorneys, the settlement was for $1.5 million, I think. Attorneys took a big part of it, of course, or a significant part of it. But there was a legal change, and I think there was a similar settlement, although I'm not as clear on what that was, in Atlanta, Georgia, and there have been court actions in Austin, Texas, throwing out the sleeping sections of their camping ban, and in Portland, Oregon, throwing out their camping ban entirely. As I understand it, in Portland, they are still harassing homeless people, but it did allow for the, illegally, of course, but it did allow for the setup of Dignity Village, a homeless encampment, which met with numerous other encampments here in Santa Cruz in the Right to Sleep Summit way back in May of last year. And then there was a Right to Sleep March to Sacramento and so forth that I've talked about on the air. So law sometimes can be helpful. And also in the San Francisco's Coalition on Homelessness has also been successful in taking small claims court cases to court regularly. If police take your stuff, then you go and sue them for the amount of money that you've lost, or the amount of the valuables you've lost. And I haven't seen the records. I haven't, extensively analyzed it, but my somewhat casual conversations with Coalition on Homelessness staff workers and the attorney up there indicate that that has been successful both in getting some compensation and also in deterring future such expeditions against poor people outside. So I definitely think small claims court action is a remedy here in Santa Cruz that people might want to try more regularly. The one time I tried a small claims court action, was it small claims or municipal? I was suing a bailiff, James Thurber, who somewhat notorious bailiff who'd assaulted numerous homeless people, of course, allegedly all in the pursuit of his duties. But he had also arrested me for trying to for picking up a piece of paper off his desk that it was scratch paper, which I was trying to write his name because he was refusing to give his name and badge number. So I had to kind of take it off his badge, and he was refusing to convey a note to the judge. It was a kind of a, I don't know, I call it a little power scene there, but I mean, the public has to have the power to, you know, get certain rights asserted, or else they don't have any power at all, and it's all in the hands of the institutional authorities. Anyway, this court lawsuit that I'm taking to court I think it's just about been filed. And these days you file federal lawsuits by email, I'm told. And attorneys Rhonda and Jim Fossbinder of Hawaii and Los Angeles have filed this lawsuit, and they are with the assistance of Kate Wells locally. And it's going to court claiming that I was falsely arrested, and I'm going to actually be reading more from this lawsuit, and I'm going to be looking to actually do a press conference on it, hoping that I can get other people to stand up supportively, not just so much for me, but for the right of people to use sidewalks, to have political tables, because some of you probably recall, most of you probably know, the city council recently passed the move-along law, allegedly against musicians, really, and performers, to force them after February 13th, so they cannot be in one place more than an hour, even if there's no complaint. If they have any kind of display device, there's some controversy as to what a display device is, but what it really affects is not so much musicians, although it may, depending on the preferences of the police officer, but it affects political tablers, because there is no doubt that a table is a display device. And it is no doubt that tablers generally table for more than an hour. And the wording of the law says you got to go after an hour, you got to move at least 100 feet, and you can't come back for 24 hours. And you also cannot be more than 10 feet from building front, a kiosk, a crosswalk, a bench, a drinking fountain, a phone, and all the stuff, which severely limits the amount of space you actually have to table on the sidewalk anyway. So council members Kennedy and Premack are supposedly going to work on this to fix it all up and set up so-called exemption zones at probably the first or second city council meeting in February. But the issue really came before the Downtown Commission last summer in August, and they examined it pretty thoroughly. And they talked to merchants, and they walked out the territory, they discussed it at length, and they found that they couldn't recommend exemption zones because, A, there were too few that were actually workable, and those few would result in sort of a congestion area that would be unfair to both the people using them and the stores in front of which they were declared. So it seemed to me particularly like an Alice in Wonderland exercise when the city council went through this song and dance with Emily Riley's Let a Smile Be Your Umbrella, We're All So Positive, Moving Forward approach, when she was actually denying the reality of what her own downtown commission had found, paying no attention to it at all, like making it up as she went along. Mainly, I guess, because Kennedy and Rotkin seemed to think, as Matthews is now sort of the motivating force too on the council, that if they simply set up absurd laws but tell the police don't bother to enforce them most of the time, and the police decide they want to do that, because the police can do what they want pretty much unless the city manager starts threatening firings of police officials, which ain't too likely to happen, they figure, Kennedy and Rutkin do, that this is all going to die down, that it'll just be Santa Cruz as normal, and if there's some questionable person like me at a political table, they can go after me because, you know, I'm questionable, but the rest of the people, everything will be okay, you know, or if there's a problem with a person who is, you know, I don't know, playing extremely bad music, they'll enforce those laws then. There are several problems with this analysis, and we've talked about this before. The first is that the very existence of such laws discourages street performers and discourages political tablers because they don't want to have to risk having to deal with a bad or a hostile or an angry police officer, or a police officer who's, you know, sergeant of the day changed the policy, or a complaint from a citizen. A complaint from a citizen, theoretically, should be able to produce an arrest, and if it's a merchant, it will. If it's somebody who's poor or who looks poor, it probably won't. That's just the realities here, and I'm working on that one too, and I hope to get your help on that. And that's what this lawsuit is really about. It's to hold the police accountable for a really clear instance of police abuse. I was arrested for blocking the sidewalk a year ago, And my table was on a sidewalk that was some, God, who knows, 18 feet wide. It was a huge area before they put in that fence. And I was within, 6 feet of the planter. So I couldn't possibly have been blocking the sidewalk. I mean, I suppose if you consider maybe there was an area behind me, people trying to walk through, that they had to, sometimes it got a bit congested. Maybe, but not really. If you look at the videos, police did videos, we subpoenaed the videos, and the video shows you, kind of if you play it at fast speed, you see people rushing back and forth at a fast speed on the video, and nobody's walking around. So it's clear that there's unimpeded movement on the sidewalk. So it's a lie that I was arrested for blocking the sidewalk. I was arrested for offending Matisse Selman and because Butchie Baker had nothing better to do that day, or that because he decided that was something he wanted to do. Frankly, I see it as a matter of kind of police power on his part. He's the one who sort of initiated the return to attacking Chalkers downtown. He deliberately went up to the city attorney to confirm that he could go after Becky Johnson for chalking at city council in what had traditionally been a free speech right and is a free speech right. And then some months later began to use it downtown. Actually, Johnson was taken to jail, $1,000 bail, faces a charge on Valentine's Day for those who want to kind of line up behind that case. And for those who know of any attorneys, she's still looking for an attorney on that case. You might want to give a call, by the way. 423-HUFF is the HUFF line. If you want to leave a message on that issue or other issues during the show and you don't want to be on the air, that's the number to call, 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF. HUFF is an acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And the number to call if you're interested in breaking into this long monologue here on the air, and you can talk on the air, as you've heard, is 427-3772, 427-3772. And that's 831 if you're out of the area here, 831-427-3772. And we can chat about any of these issues if you have been harassed recently downtown, or if, on the other hand, you have a different view. If you think that the police are doing a pretty good job and things are getting pretty mellow downtown, and what am I rambling about, feel free to call and let me know what your thoughts are. Be happy to put them on the air. I may disagree with you, but you got a right to talk, too. So anyway, this lawsuit is a lawsuit that's asking for damages and for an injunction, and mainly it's concerned with stopping the persistent ongoing harassment of people downtown. It's not framed in those terms, because I'm the person that suffered the damages and suffered the arrest, but it could have been anybody else, and that's the point. And I'd like to see some kind of check on that behavior downtown by the police, because it's become all too familiar. We've had people beaten for refusing to take a littering ticket for distributing breadcrumbs even after the breadcrumbs were picked up. The police review board refused to find that a valid claim, although they have to be said they did disagree with the police chief, who found it even less valid. It's going to be interesting, because if you look at the excessive force complaints upheld by the Citizens Police Review Board, and I am only aware of the ones against Officer David Lefevre in the 1999 Yugoslavia protest, where Lefevre put a torturous pain compliance hold on a woman holding a child, and then he was punched by Steve Argue after he refused to release the woman, and Argue went to jail for 7 months. Lefevre continued to serve on the force until an independent investigation, the only one of its kind, happened. Not a public hearing, unfortunately, where we could have actually heard the testimony, but an independent investigation by Diane Christensen from Berkeley, hired by the city, the CPRB, through the offices of the city manager, the first time that ever happened, after massive protests at the CPRB. They found, that independent investigation, she found, I should say, that there were at least, there was excessive force against Steve Argue, and there was pepper spraying of him, there was excessive force by Lefevre against the woman Juliana and her child. And shortly thereafter, Lefevre left the force, and the word has it from a former mayor that he was forced off the force. He was going to leave, or he was going to get his butt kicked out. So that had an impact. But the police department's findings in that complaint were not sustained. He didn't, that is to say, when it went to the Chief Belcher, he disagreed with the independent investigation. He didn't want to find his officers guilty of excessive force. He doesn't like that idea. And I don't know that an officer has been found guilty of excessive force in the last decade under Chief Belcher, even though it's been claimed repeatedly on this show that there have been instances of excessive force ranging from the Brian Andrews shooting of where Hennig, I believe, and another officer, there were actually four officers involved, Brian Andrews was shot in the back in a situation where the police invaded a woman's, his wife's home. Lori Andrus, she's still seeking legal damages, I believe, on this issue. And the complaint still hasn't come up before the police review board. So I guess you can say if they hadn't, maybe the police department did its own private secret investigation and had a finding of excessive force, but they never told anybody about it. And, you know, I guess you can say, well, you needn't embarrass those poor police officers who are found guilty of excessive force in an internal investigation by making it public to the community. But one also thinks that that really should be kind of a deterrent and also an encouragement of the citizenry to indeed report and not be intimidated about reporting complaints about excessive force. Being deterred from reporting is a really significant factor. I may have mentioned on the air, I think I already mentioned it briefly today, the report by San Jose Mercury News writer Ken McLaughlin that Mike Rotkin had implied that I was responsible for the overwhelming majority of frivolous complaints against officers at the CPRB, and that was one of the prime reasons for the demise of the board. It's a false statement in numerous ways all around the board. I filed 13 complaints in the last, throughout the history of the board, according to Donna Hendricks, the board staff member I talked to on Thursday or Friday. And some of those were upheld, some of those were unsustained, some were exonerated, and some were found unfounded. But, obviously, they weren't the overwhelming majority of frivolous complaints, or complaints. You know, and to call a complaint a frivolous complaint is to suggest, although McLaughlin denied this in later conversations, that the complaint is a false complaint. Now, a false complaint is a knowingly false complaint, which is punishable by misdemeanor prosecution. Making a false police report, of course, is punishable under any circumstances, but the police have a special level of protection. If you file, their lobby has gotten through the California legislature, along with crazy laws against drug use, which we've all been familiar with for the last four decades, that have ruined the lives of hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of people. We have the situation where the police have a special layer of protection, privilege, you might say, where if you wish to file a complaint against them, any other employee, you file a complaint to their boss. If you file a complaint against a cop, you have to swear under penalty of perjury that you are telling the truth, and you also have to read this thing in capital letters blaring at you that it is a crime to file a knowing false report against a police officer. It's not a false report. It's a crime to file a false complaint. A false report is where you go to a police officer and allege a crime about somebody. And that is, you know, if you make a false report against someone, whether it's a police officer or someone else, yes, that is a crime itself. But to make a complaint against someone and then have that sitting on your right in front of you as you sit down and you're nervous about making a complaint about a man with a gun and a large organization with you know gang colors throughout the city anyway that you may see again soon, then you see this, that you're not only going to get harassed by him and his peers, if possibly, but you're also going to face potential judicial harassment above and beyond, let's say, protections that every other employee of the city or county or state has. And if you make a complaint that is found to be false against another individual, there's no requirement that you be prosecuted for perjury or for the crime of making a false complaint. You're not alleging, usually these complaints don't allege crimes. They allege, you know, rudeness, they allege excessive force, abusive behavior. And they're concerned with correcting the behavior or making sure the department policies are changed. You're not asking for a judicial action. If you were, you'd be going to the DA, or you'd be going to the newspapers, as people should be, by the way, and demanding criminal prosecution of various crimes. That's not what a complaint against a police officer usually involves. So this is just another layer of intimidation. And McLaughlin, in his statement about my filing frivolous complaints, put me in a position where I was concerned, and still am, that my credibility is really endangered by a newspaper report that says I'm filing frivolous or false complaints, because that's crime. If you accuse a person of a crime, there's some so-called crimes that aren't crimes at all, like sleeping, and I suppose that's, you know, that's how that goes. We live with those sleep crimes and so forth. But if you accuse a reporter of making false reports against the police, who's going to believe me when I'm on the air talking to you now? I mean, why should you believe me if a respected reporter like Ken McLaughlin says I'm, you know, essentially highlights a claim by a city council member, which wasn't made publicly, by the way, apparently it was made privately to him, that I make the overwhelming majority of frivolous complaints. He admitted that Rotkin didn't use the word frivolous. So I'm still pressing forward on a retraction, seeking a retraction from this, and that's usually the predecessor to a libel suit, which I've never done, and I don't usually believe in libel law. I think that people should be allowed to debate things freely. But I think he should be required to clarify exactly what was said, and that he wasn't saying that I was making false complaints, that I'm not a person who's that, or that if Rotkin really said that he should quote Rotkin, and I can take it up with him. Anyway, it's all about bad journalism here in Santa Cruz. It's all about bad political repressive behavior, both by the police force and by their pals on the city council, Rotkin, Matthews, Riley, Premack, Kennedy, Porter, Fitzmaurice. And it's all about you and what your response is when this happens. Have you been hassled by the police? What do you do about it? Well, I've got some ideas, and I've been using them over the years, and who knows, maybe they're not so effective. They aren't in terms, at least, of having immediate changes on the police department. One hopes that incremental pressure can produce something over the long run. But I'd say go to the website www.santacruz.indymedia.org. Again, www.santacruz.indymedia.org. And this is a website where you can actually post an account of what has happened to you. And you'll actually see some accounts if you go to that website. Some interesting stuff there. I'm actually going to kind of meander over to the computer here and tune it in and kind of read you some of the recent accounts. So I'm going to www.santacruz.indymedia.org, and they're having trouble finding it. Maybe I dialed it wrongly. There we go. And the website comes on. That's the Santa Cruz Independent Media Center. And there are featured articles in the middle, and on the right side, there's the latest news, and there's a series of interesting items. There's a Santa Cruz IMC meeting coming up Sunday, 7 p.m. at the Cafe Bertolisi. That's today. And that's a meeting of the Santa Cruz Independent Media Center, this very website. They're meeting at 7 o'clock today at the Bertolisi. They got an agenda. They got reports from their tech and editorial. And looks pretty technical, but I think getting involved with this group is a good idea. On the other hand, if you look a little further, you see an opportunity to make your own comments. As it says, you write your name, your email, and you can put a comment in there. It's easier to use in things like the Sentinel website if you want to engage in dialogue with those somewhat right-wing folks. But this one, there's a comment below it from Steve Argue, who you may know used to do a show on Free Radio. He's now writing a book. He ran for city council last year, got the significant number of votes. I'm not sure, what was it, 2,500, 3,000? Maybe Steve's listening and he can tune in and tell me. And he writes, good meeting, bad place. The owner of the Cafe Pergolisi is a bigot who kicked me and all the members of the anti-racist action out of the cafe because a friend, Isla, who I have no control over, walked into the place with incense one day. On a previous day, the same ownership voiced strong opposition to my activism supporting the homeless, giving me the strong impression that his kicking me out had nothing to do with Ayla's incense, but everything to do with my political opinions. After being kicked out for supposedly for Ayla's incense. I tried to talk to the ownership, yet when I said I was a good customer, they complained that all I would do was only order coffee or tea and sit and read too long. I never sat for more than about an hour without buying something more, but I guess this or my political views were unacceptable. I urge everyone who believes in freedom of speech to boycott Cafe Pergolesi. And I have, on a number of occasions, kind of steered meetings away from Pergolesi. I haven't boycotted Pergolesi, I have to admit. Sometimes I just forget about this incident. But I shouldn't, because a similar process happened to me, still is happening to me in some places in town, but at the former Java House, now the Union Cafe Union, or Union Cafe, for 7-8 years, I was barred from the Java House by Kevin and Stuart, the owner and the manager, because I had supported Wanton Dave Jacobs, a homeless man, who smoked a joint half a block away, and there somebody complained, some planner complained, and they were nervous about their permits. I think there should be a process that cafes have. If you're going to be, you know, if there's an exclusion, let it be for like a month, and then there can be a renegotiation process. It's particularly important for poor and homeless people because cafes are the few areas, one of the few places they have, where they can go to get in out of the cold, or they can buy something relatively cheaply and sort of have a little space briefly for a time, and a little quiet. And it's why one of the great values, if there's a great value of Denny's and Santa Cruz Diner, there are a couple of the places that are open late at night. Used to be a lot more places open in the old days, like in the 70s. Not so much anymore. So what I'm talking about, though, is the Indie Media website, and it's really an interesting website, and I encourage you to give it a try. Again, www.santacruz.indiemedia.org. Probably most people listening to this show have already done it. There's stuff of mine posted, Move Along, It's the Law, an early edition of the report on the city council's crazy anti-performer, anti-political Taylor laws. There's notes from the protest up in San Francisco. There's James Lawson's call for nonviolent direct action. Eco-farming. There's been some criticism of this website also for putting on so much. A lot of articles from the Santa Cruz Sentinel are reprinted here that seem pertinent to some folks. Sentinel generally sucks the big weenie, as I like to say, which is, that is to say, it's bad news. I don't like the Sentinel's coverage. It's biased, slanted, inaccurate, incomplete. And the question is, what is it doing on this website? And the answer is, well, it's intended, I guess, to stir controversy. It'd be nice if people posted their own stuff. And that's, of course, really what this website is about. And that really brings me back to the point, which is police harassment. If you are harassed or suffer some discrimination, as you're about to hear, I'm going to play an account of some alleged discrimination by hotel owners downtown. It's important to get that information or even that allegation out to the community. I guess in some extent there are legal risks. I mean, you have to make statements that you believe to be true, and you have to exercise a certain amount of care in putting them out. You cannot recklessly throw out charges with malice and disregard of the facts. That's libelous or slanderous. But you don't have to, on the other hand, you know, go to the nth degree to find out that they are true or false and do, you know, hours of research. There is a First Amendment in this country, which has still been recognized by Supreme Court under decisions like the Sullivan decision, that allows you, as a writer, to write about or as a person to speak about your concerns and claims about what you see going on around you, what you've experienced. So you can go to this website, www.santacruz.indymedia.org, and post a story about it, and then you can also solicit from other people their experiences. You can say, please, if you've had a bad experience with the Bookshop Santa Cruz or with Pergolesi or Downtown on the Streets or Sergeant Baker or anybody else. Or if you've got, you know, let's post this on the site, say it. And if you're afraid to put the information under your own name, use a pseudonym. But do give accurate information. So
The reason I mention this is because I think we need to establish a record of what's going on, whether it's harassment of musicians, harassment of poor people downtown, discrimination, racial discrimination and profiling. We're going to lose, we have lost, the Citizens Police Review Board. They defunded it fundamentally. They eliminated $60,000, which in essence kills the budget almost completely this year. I mean, the claim is this is only two-thirds of the budget. You see that in today's paper, that there's it's a $90,000 budget. Well, it kills all the staff, so there's nobody on the staff, nobody doing any of the work for receiving complaints and so forth. And it's nobody's going to put together the agenda. Nobody's going to arrange the meeting space or time. This is not going to happen, and I think the office space is likely to be seized, too. This will all be coming down probably by, I think, March, early March is when it's all going to come to a complete closure. Now, I'd like to see the board, well, I'm telling you to do this for years, they don't pay any attention, but now they're seeing, I think, the consequences of not taking the outreach to the community that they needed to do, go to the public and do a press conference and contact student groups and talk, maybe, I guess, they're maybe talk about a, who knows, things like a independent people's tribunal or a police review board in exile or a call on ACLU and other groups from other cities to hold, join forums, all of which is, frankly, I think rather unlikely, even though there are some people on this board that really are determined to deal with racial profiling, to deal with selective enforcement. And they're determined, and because they're determined, that's the reason the board is going down the tubes, because Rotkin, Kennedy, and others don't want that to happen. For instance, the board passed a resolution on selective enforcement proposed by activist Sherry Connable, concerned with the fact that the police are, you know, singling out individuals that they either don't like or regard as problems themselves or for whatever reason, and enforcing laws against them, but ignoring other people who are violating exactly the same laws, such as playing a musical instrument in front of a cafe, which is illegal now. It will be illegal with a display device after February 13th as well, but it's currently illegal completely to play a musical instrument in front of a street cafe if you have a cup or soliciting or if there's any understanding that you're looking for money at all. That's illegal. And of course, you walk down the street, you'll find a lot of people doing it. But occasionally you'll see police going after people. Now you say, well, isn't that good? We get rid of the bad performers, we get rid of the bad people, and so forth, and the rest of the people get left alone. That's sort of the Kennedy position, Councilmember Kennedy's position. And that sounds good, but the problem is, bad with respect to what? Are the police the music critics? And if somebody's doing something bad, isn't there a law? Other laws, like excessive noise, or disturbing the peace that you can use to address this with? Or, more important, non-laws, like the street performers' voluntary guidelines, which you can also find on the Indie Media website, by the way. You just have to scroll down further or use the search engine. It's a nice search engine on the Indie Media website. Voluntary street performers' guidelines, which worked for, what, 20 years? Put together by Morgani and Tom Noddy and 30 or 40 other street performers way back in 1980 when certain merchants and police wanted to criminalize all street performing or severely regulate it in Santa Cruz. The problem with selective enforcement is it gives the police officer sort of this unbridled discretion to do what she or he wants to do. If the laws are made so broad that a cop can just pick a law and use it to harass someone they don't like, it removes all protections from individuals and puts all the power in the hands of the police. And if you trust the police, even if they're the best people in the world and the most accurate people in the world and the most sensitive and so forth people in the world, are they always going to be? And is that the kind of system that we really want? And obviously, you know my answer. I don't think so. So this selective enforcement resolution went to the Citizens Police Review Board after, largely through a work by Sherry, put the resolution together, but a number of us also put together petitions with hundreds of signatures pointing out that police harassment and selective enforcement has been a major concern for the last 9 months downtown. It was brought up at the Porter Riley Downtown Issues Meeting. Now, those are the two council members who put together these horrible laws and ignored all the public testimony on police harassment and just listened to their kind of their private emails from the merchants and passed prefabricated laws about, again, the forbidden zones and the stupid move-along and leave your backpack anywhere on the sidewalk, face a $162 fine, even if it's not blocking anything, if it's unattended. And no bubble blowing unless you're a professional bubble performer. Or, no playing with a rubber ball or frisbee, even if it's completely out of the way. Sounds like we have a caller here. Hi there, caller. You're on free radio.
I think they've been doing a good job of, what is that? That shouldn't be feedback. I think they did a good job of removing, like, excessive drunks down from down the mall. You know, that's one of the good things that came out of it.
Excessive junk?
Drunks.
Drunks. Well, you know, drunks who are drunk are drunk, and there's a law against public drunkenness, so what do you need laws against?
Well, they seem to have gravitated downtown under guise of other activity.
If the drunk is a drunk, he's a drunk.
Right, and that's junkies are junkie panhandlers who panhandle all day, get their drugs and OD in the porta-potties.
Mm-hmm.
And they
and
crack down on that, too.
How many of those do we know? How many OD? How many people have OD in a porta-potty?
And they've cracked down on that, too.
Yeah, well...
Well,
yeah.
I just go by knowing how many people I see not enough as they're sitting there, standing there, panhandling. You know? And I'd like to see, you know, a lot of what you talk about, you know, has some good merit, you
yes.
know? It does have merit. And there are times when you can point the finger so much until you can start scripting solutions.
Well, the problem I have is this is gentrification. This is not really.
Well, I want to hear some.
This is directed against poor
people.
I've yet to hear
alternative solutions.
Solutions to what? I mean, if you're talking about the drug war problem, and the
No. To what gravitates downtown, and how to deal with a potentially hazardous situation involving individuals.
Well, my problem is
who are in a desperate situation.
My problem is the actually hazardous situation where police officers have unbridled power downtown, and it's getting worse and worse. I see it differently. I mean, I think when you have the young white kids on the weekends doing their drunk thing, I agree with you. I don't know what to do about that situation either, really. But I know that the police don't enforce these 14-foot laws against them. Walk down on Friday night and see if you don't see people sitting on the
ground. Okay, but wait a minute.
Come on.
But wait a minute.
They use it against the people that the merchants don't like.
But wait a minute. You're forgetting something, Robert.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Those people pay money, and they earn their money, and they earn their right.
A lot of homeless people earn their money, too.
And they earn their right.
Let's not be discriminatory here. A lot of homeless people.
The homeless people.
A lot of poor people.
The homeless people earn their money by trickle. Some of them are desperate enough to sell very, very insignificant amounts of marijuana for a very, very expensive amount of money, and the quality is not there, and they know it, and they still take much more than their share of percent.
Why is this your concern?
Because these are the individuals that are standing out in the mall. Your mall scene that you so protect has this element in it, and I have yet to hear you address any way of a hint of a solution.
I don't see.
All
it as
I
a
hear
problem.
You do is address the problem from the position you see it in, and over again, and it never changes.
I think
Robert,
you're talking about problems of poverty. They're going to show up.
No,
and
I'm talking about
addressed.
Downtown problems.
No,
problem.
Downtown is where you see the problem of
right,
poverty.
Right, but
caller.
You know what?
I
haven't heard you say here. I have never heard you with any solution for housing. I threw a brainstorm at you once for you to bend and mold at your will, and you went off something about council members and space available. And I'm thinking locally. Am I thinking globally? That, you know what I mean?
There is no immediate solution to the housing situation, caller, locally. Unless there's a huge infusion of money. And I support that. But the problem is, until that happens, you don't go after and victimize people. And that's been my point.
Okay, so what I've always learned is a humanitarian is a person that knows and does, as opposed to an activist who jumps around. It would be like two people standing in an accident and this person bleeding. an activist would jump around going, we need new safety laws, we need, and jumping around and getting everybody excited, while the humanitarian is the person that goes over and says, okay, lie still, don't move, and starts the first aid.
Well, that's
the first word
slanderous.
In activism is act.
That's a slander.
So if you have a problem,
you're under arrest for making such comments of color.
Act about it.
Activists actually, you know,
solutions.
Activists, I think, change things.
Why address
eventually.
The problem over and over,
I mean,
and
I like
not have a better solution?
I like humanitarians too.
Obviously,
but,
something's
you know,
not working because you're not coming up with they're not coming up with their own funding to move their own machine. You know, if a man is so wrong, then how is he making money and the people that are right are not making money?
Well, it's easy to make money.
They're too busy saying
so,
the man is keeping
well, it
us
on what,
down.
You know, I mean, that kind of argument is so hollow, caller. If you consider, for example, people made millions and millions off of slavery. And you bet your butt it was wrong. And people make millions and millions off exploiting
people. And people made millions and millions
wait a minute,
off,
wait a minute,
of,
off of exploiting people in foreign countries. And it's wrong. It doesn't. The fact that a person makes a lot of money off of something does not indicate it's the right thing to do, or even that it's good for the majority of people. It's good for the few people that make the money off.
Well, people's inherent nature is laziness. We can be a lazy people, and slavery is the prime example of laziness. You know,
slavery is an example. This is interesting.
It's a prime example of laziness. And downtown,
now,
you have a prime example of laziness, which is lack of motivation. How can you be motivated when you know that all you're working for is to keep the whip off your back?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? How can you want to make a person healthy by tending his garden when he's cracking a whip at your back? I mean, if that doesn't distress a person deeper than the whip, then I don't know
well,
what
caller,
does.
As I understand it, your concern is that I'm not proposing enough positive solutions, and that you would like to see some way to get rid of proportion of people who are drunks and junkies, and that you feel that
I would like to see the people that are still slipping get up before they're down.
Well, that's
I would
nice.
Like to
I'm
see
sure
the
we all would.
That are
no.
down
sure.
get an upward mobility and stop dragging people down with them and
right.
Stop putting
okay.
other people in despair with them.
In the meantime, however,
lonely.
Do you support the downtown
miserable
ordinances?
Miserable people
Excuse me.
Feel lonely. They
caller, do you support the downtown ordinances currently? Do you support the laws make it illegal to sit 14 feet from a building?
I haven't seen everything as it is. I know that downtown runs a lot smoother. There is still the scene. The hipsters have faded. The scenesters are going away. There's still some extremely, extremely frequent regulars who
you know, I don't see you downtown
roots.
Much.
I
don't
I think
see
they're growing roots.
How much downtown? How often do you come downtown?
Twice a week now.
Twice a week. Yeah, that's because I used to see you downtown a lot in the early 90s, but I haven't seen you downtown much at all.
Right. Quite frankly, Robert, between you and me, don't tell anybody.
Uh-oh.
But the whole scene, like, really turned me off, man.
I understand. Well, look, caller, I got to tell you, we've talked about this for 10 minutes. If you're not there, if you're not on the scene other than twice a week, I don't know.
But
I mean,
the stuff that stands out to me, Robert, is really insulting, and I see lazy people being made lazy and coming through desire instead of motivation. Desire is an easy replacement for motivation.
Well, thank you, caller, but you didn't answer my question about the criminalization of poor people downtown through these laws. That's my
I'd
concern.
I'd like to see people have motivation. How's
what about the laws? You support the existing laws,
like
is my concern. It sounds like you do.
The community center turned into job skill training. I'd like to see where I could call the phone company and talk to a human instead of a machine while millions of people are without jobs. You know, I'd like to see the shelters which are closed and have more volunteers.
Right, and in the meantime, do you want to arrest people for sitting 14 feet from building? That's my question.
Can we get PETA to save our shelters?
Okay, so you've got all these ideas you'd like to see, and I'd like to see the same projects. In the meantime, do you want to see people arrested for being in public spaces and poor?
If they're going to sit there and freaking and make me freaking annoy the shit out of me, then yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate
get them
your
out of
candor.
There. But if they're just going to sit there
let's accept that. I mean,
and contribute to the ambiance, then let them
be. Well, I think
man.
Everybody should have to prove they're contributing
right.
something before they're allowed to sit
the
there.
Deal.
That's a great idea,
here's
caller.
Here's the deal. If
I'm
they
gonna,
don't make themselves be noticed,
I'm
going to
roll. I'm
going to
roll, caller.
If they jump
give you the
out
last
and,
word
and,
now. Go ahead.
And annoy people, then move them on.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye. And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Robert Norris. We're talking civil rights on the streets in Santa Cruz. And I'm now going to play you kind of a interview, not just kind of an interview, it is an interview, from January 22nd, about a couple that was denied service at hotels. So not only can't you sit 14 feet from a building, if you since we need these laws for people who are feeling annoyed with the folks downtown. I can't tell you how many business people I've been annoyed with, but does that mean I have the right to move them out of town or arrest them? I don't think so. I regard that as kind of a strange approach to things. And I understand, however, it's a perspective. I mean, I get annoyed by people. And if somebody is really trespassing on my, they're threatening me or something, I've called the police on different occasions. So, but that has to do with specific behavior, not a broad-based criminalization of everybody and anybody who happens to be engaging in innocent behavior with the idea that you're just going to clear the streets for the shoppers. It's just, to me, it's obscene. That annoys me, although I wouldn't arrest the people who passed those laws. Let's hear this now.
So it's about 12:35 in front of the Wired Wash Cafe, and I'm talking with
Brooke
and with
Ziggy
and Brooke, and what's the name of this pooch?
Give me, baby.
And the pooch's name is
Aqua.
And Aqua, you're here at the end of a makeshift leash, and the two of you have been having interesting encounters with the hotel industry here in Santa Cruz?
Yeah, actually, discrimination is what I would call it.
And what hotel are we talking about?
Most all of them on Ocean Street, all the way up Riverside Avenue, all the way across the river. Yeah.
How many did you actually speak to or see evidence of discrimination?
The day in question, we went to 6 different hotels.
And what day in question was that?
That would have been 2 days ago, Monday.
Today is January 22nd, Wednesday around early afternoon. And this was about what time of day?
It's about 5 o'clock on a Monday night, very not busy night.
And tell me, you went to each of these 6 hotels mm-hmm. yourself, or you?
Yeah, me and my girlfriend Brooke went to each one. She tried to get a room at each
one. Pooch with you?
No, he was in the car. They never saw the dog.
Okay. And what kind of a vehicle did you have?
A shiny black Jeep Cherokee.
Did they see the vehicle?
They saw our vehicle, yeah. The vehicle's in good shape. There wouldn't be any reason for them to be.
Vermont license plate?
Yeah, out-of-state license.
And you had money up front?
Yep.
So?
Cash up front.
$5. Cash in hand, top dollar, everything they asked for.
And what happened? Give me a description of the first encounter that you remember.
Once they would say the price to me and I would agree to it, they would come up with other excuses on what else I would need.
Such as?
The room. Such as a credit card or a $100 deposit.
Okay.
Immediately after, they ran into our friend who gave them $300 cash and they gave her a room for a week, which is a discount, actually. And then we went inside and offered to pay $60 for a night, which is full price, and they denied us.
And your friend, differently dressed, same dress?
No, she's differently dressed than us. She hangs out with us. You wouldn't know it by looking at her, but she's a hippie, lives on the streets just like we do. Just has a slightly different appearance than most of us.
You have an old cap on, a scraggly red, brownish beard, some funky shorts under which are some long blues, I want to call them long johns, and some shoes with big shoelaces.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention a rather ratty-looking red sweatshirt.
Yeah, that's about it right there.
You, on the other hand, have, what do you call those, Nike-like shoes? Kind of a soft and... Well, describe your appearance.
Comfortable.
You got a gray, you're clad in gray with a kind of, but looks kind of pretty informal, covered with cat or dog hair of some sort. It's very questionable.
Definitely covered in dog hair.
So, you spoke to six different managements?
Yep. Six different hotels, got turned away at each one. The last one that actually rented to us said that she would get in trouble if her management found out because she's not allowed to rent to anyone with dreadlocks.
Now, that's another thing. You have dreadlocks, and again, your name is?
Brooke.
Brooke. And have you considered filing a complaint with, first of all, complaining to the Chamber of Commerce and then complaining to the city, go to the city council and call the mayor and say you've been denied accommodations at six different hotels because of your appearance?
Yes, because I have a hotel record here. It's under my name every time, and I can say that I've never destroyed a room.
What is your full name?
Brooke Blinebry.
How do you spell that?
B-L-I-N-E-B-R-Y. Never had a party, never had the cops called on me, and yet I cannot get into a warm place to sleep at night.
Now, so in the past, such deposits were not demanded?
Uh-huh.
Such deposits weren't demanded in the past?
Nope.
Last time you were here was?
Last winter.
And how long did you stay at that time?
6 months.
6 months?
Right. 6, 7 months.
And you two were together at that time?
Yep.
You also say that you are with child?
I'm pregnant. I'm 6 months pregnant.
And not showing much, I must say. It must be a teeny tiny baby. Are you wearing loose clothing?
Yeah, baggy clothes.
Take it all off. Let's see that. Did any point, of course, you didn't say, I'm pregnant to any of the people. And
No.
No, I didn't. I thought that when you rented a room, it wasn't about them judging me. I thought it was about them accommodating my needs. I was a paying customer.
Well, yeah, but you are one of the Untermenschen, the undesirables, the outcasts. You have to understand that in America, it is a new day in America. We're trying to get rid of your kind. Nothing personal, mind you. I know you can't have it, you know, you're not responsible for being born in the raggedy condition, but nonetheless. So, how many hours did all this search for a room take?
About an hour and a half.
And did you get any different kinds of responses in terms of any, you know, was there any variety in these responses?
Not really. Pretty much the underlying tone was that everybody seems to be answering to somebody who is going to get them in a lot of trouble if they find out that they rented to somebody with dreadlocks or if they rent to us. And the only way they will rent to us is if we pay about, it works out to almost $200 a night for a single hotel room in the flats.
Now, you mean pay it or put down a deposit for it?
Oh, you put down a deposit per se, but then, I've heard lots of people that never get their deposits back, so we never try and do that because they always come up with something for you. You know, either you used both beds and you weren't supposed to, so it's a $100 maid fee to fix it, or anything they can use to get that $100 not back to you, they'll do it.
So did you have this problem last year?
No.
And you paid what, on a weekly, daily, monthly basis?
Daily.
You got the names of any of these motels, or can you find them out for us?
Oh, I know them. The first one we went to was the Riverside Inn. The second one we went to was the Econo Lodge next to it. The third one we went to was Best Western, Torchlight Inn. The fourth one we went to was the Seaside Inn. And I can't recall the last one right there. Guest house, and then finally the Incal.
The Incal, the infamous Incal, where actually I myself have stayed, interestingly enough.
It's last choice on our list of places we want to go because the Incal is dirty and there's always some kind of shady business going on there. Last year we were there and someone got stabbed outside of our door. That's why we're trying to go to...
Well, obviously, you're troublemakers who attract the wrong sort of people. Probably play hacky sack downtown.
Oh, yeah. That's a dangerous sport.
Yeah, well, there you are. You see, you're back in town. I've warned Emily Riley. Yeah. So you be on your guard. Yeah. We have a new mayor in town.
Oh, no.
So, where are you staying?
In the Jeep now.
So you're illegally habitating a vehicle, probably sleeping after 11 o'clock at night.
Not until you live at...
I see. So you're probably violating the county ordinance against inhabiting a vehicle by the side of the road.
Yes.
I'll contact the deputies soon.
Okay.
Is there a phone number or contact you can be reached at? I'm going to actually put it in this notebook.
There is.
And rather than put it on the tape, is it okay if I play this tape over the air?
Sure.
I'm going to put down your full names here on the notebook record. I want to inform those who are listening that we are now beginning HUFFIS, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, in sympathy with the Street Performers Buskers Guild, as well as Downtown for All and other people harassed by the police, trying to make a record of police harassment as well as discrimination in other businesses. And this, of course, falls under that particular rubric. If you call 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and leave a message, please let us know if you've been discriminated against, where it happened, when it happened, who did it, if you know the name of the person or description of the person, what time it happened. Were there any witnesses? We'll have to ask you about that. I take it there were no witnesses to your...
Just the managers of the hotel.
Right. And if you attempted to get any kind of satisfaction by a complaint, what the result of that was, we're going to try to put out a flyer which lists all this stuff, and maybe there'll be an announcement on the HUFF line. But you can leave a message, a fairly long message, and we'll then make a record of it, and eventually we're going to post these kind of bits of information on the Internet so people can be aware of the past problems that have been had in the Santa Cruz area and maybe eventually get together and take some sort of legal action or at least be aware of what's going on. Say this again, Ziggy.
I was saying that it gets really, really bothersome having no record of anything in Santa Cruz, never causing any trouble in Santa Cruz, never having a party in a hotel room or anything, and still being denied a safe, warm place to sleep, even when we have cash.
They force us to go to the flats where it's too unsafe to walk to the grocery store when we have enough money to stay in a place that's nice and safe.
Yeah, they just want to keep us hidden in the flats is all I can imagine. Keep all the undesirables away.
Maybe time for some protests. Would you be interested in leading some public protests in front of these hotels?
I'd be interested in participating, not leading. I've got issues with that in the past already.
Okay. And what about you?
I'll participate. I don't know about leading either.
Okay. Well, I encourage you to come to our next HUFF meeting a week from today. I'll give you a little card of that. HUFF meets every Wednesday, 8:30 a.m. in Baker's Square Restaurant, where even the ne'er-do-wells get coffee. Brooke, you're 6 months pregnant. First baby?
First baby.
And first pregnancy?
First pregnancy.
And is this character responsible here, or?
Yeah, that's the father.
I see. Yes. You slap him across the face?
No.
Or congratulate him? Or neither?
Neither.
Okay. Okay. We're going into your casual sexual practices here. Yeah, we won't get into that at this time. So, what's it like for a pregnant mom who's homeless is an unusual word, and it's sort of a discriminatory word, some like houseless, some like nomadic, but you're living in your vehicle pretty much.
Yep.
And what's your source of income?
Jewelry, crafts.
Not in Santa Cruz, I'm sorry, madam. No display of merchandise.
Black market.
Oh, she's one of the underground economy folks. And you're intending to have the child here?
Yep.
Should we contact CPS now or later?
We're going to be actually moving into a place here in the next couple weeks. So we're going to put all this behind us. And I'm sure once we have a residence in Santa Cruz County, we will be treated a lot differently.
As long as you have your Nikes and your cafe lattes,
yeah.
And you maintain a low profile,
yeah.
Try to avoid...
Make eye contact with anybody.
Well, only the right sort of people.
Right.
You say that this kind of hotel discrimination, Ziggy, you have a sense it's been happening to others, or you have no specific accounts?
Right, right. A lot of people that are in circles with me.
What you could do is ask the people you meet in the next few days if they have had these incidents, and maybe make some notations for me, and then when you get back to me, we can actually see how...
Right,
you can have them contact me, but more important, if you can get some of the preliminary details, you know, it might be helpful.
All right, cool.
And if anybody out there has any stories on this, please call 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you. I'm about to go into another segment here. That was, of course, some folks complaining about hotel problems downtown. If you've had those kinds of problems, if there's been some discrimination, please... give a call to talk about it on the air, 427-3772, or give a call to the HUFF line off air, 423-HUFF. Recent story in the paper, which I'm going to read, and then I'm going to ask for some commentary from Kate Wells, who's online. Hi, Kate.
Hello.
Kate, you are a local attorney who is just not John Barisoni, our city attorney's best friend.
No, I guess not.
Well, you know, you got to work harder. Maybe you should invite him to your birthday party or vice versa. Well, this is a story. California Supreme Court upholds police complaint law. San Francisco, the California Supreme Court, this is December 5th, upheld a state law Thursday, making it a crime for citizens to knowingly lodge false accusations against police officers. The unanimous 7-member court said the law, enacted after a flood of complaints against officers following Rodney King's 1991 taped beating, does not violate free speech guarantees under the Constitution. Civil rights groups said the ruling could chill people from making legitimate complaints against officers because they may fear police who investigate themselves would retaliate and press prosecutors to file criminal charges. I have no doubt it would have this effect, said Alan Schlosser, an attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union, which urged the court to strike down the 1995 law. Ventura County Prosecutor Michael Schwartz, who asked the court to uphold the law, said the decision should not hinder people from making legitimate complaints. It only prohibits deliberate lies, Schwartz said. Before a person can be convicted, the prosecutor would have to be convinced that the person was not only wrong, but was lying. The court's decision from Justice Ming W. Chin reinstates the misdemeanor conviction of a Ventura County couple prosecuted in 1998 for falsely accusing an Oxnard police officer of exposing himself to about 50 at-risk teenagers at an awards banquet run by the department's Activities League. The Oxnard Police Department said it investigated the couple's allegation, could not corroborate them. The Ventura County District Attorneys charged Barbara Atkinson and Sean Stanistreet for filing a false complaint. The two were convicted by a jury of a law carrying a maximum 6-month jail term. They served a 30-day sentence and appealed. They have vigorously maintained that the allegations against the officer were true and are being covered up. Just because they're the California Supreme Court, they cannot throw out the First Amendment to protect corrupt police officers, said Atkinson, who will ask the U.S. Supreme Court to review the case. A state appeals court had reversed the conviction on the grounds the couple had a guaranteed right of speech. The lower court ruled that barring speech against police officers was unconstitutional because false accusations targeting firefighters, elected officials, or most anybody else is not a criminal violation. But the state Supreme Court said free speech guarantees take a back seat when it comes to police officers. The potential harm to them from false reports could damage an officer's credibility and even waste police resources investigating the complaints, the court said. The damage that could be done to police officers, the court added, is akin to the potential harm of a terrorist threat against the nation's president, which is a violation of federal law. Just as the government may criminalize only threats of violence against a specific victim, the president, so too may the legislature criminalize only knowingly false accusations against a class of victims, peace officers, Chin wrote. The court's decision, meanwhile, may revive charges in a related Solano County case. Last year, a judge dismissed charges against two women who complained about a California Highway Patrol officer. The women were driving to Reno, Nevada, and were stopped by an officer on suspicion of speeding. They complained the officer was discourteous. After reviewing a tape recording of the stop, the California Highway Patrol said the officer had acted professionally and deemed the complaint false. The case decided Thursday is called People versus Stanistreet. And again, that's a story on December 5th and from the AP line, which is California Supreme Court upheld a state law making it a crime for citizens to knowingly lodge false accusations against police officers. What's wrong with that, Kay? Shouldn't we be protecting our local police?
Well, you know, they are this, you know, elitist group that we all need to bow down to. And, it's just another case of putting them in a separate class from everybody else, where they are, you know, immune from damages, immune from prosecution, immune from this, immune from that. You know, we're creating an elitist police force that basically is above the law. They can do whatever they want and without fear of any kind of. After all, it's like it said in the article. For the most part, the people investigating these allegations are the very people that are being charged. For instance, I will, you know, refer us to the Pinto case where Officer Jason Nielsen was exonerated immediately by Sheriff Tracy for the shooting of Osvaldo Pinto. The jury has now come back and categorically stated in their decision, basically, or at least implied by their decision, that the that Officer Nielsen lied in the police report. Not only did they find that he lied, the prosecution's own expert witness found that he lied in his police report by saying that they were at close range when he shot Osvaldo.
Now, this was a situation, was this a Latino youth?
Mm-hmm.
This is in the Watsonville area where this Latino youth ran from the police officer, and then the police officer shot him and claimed he pulled a knife?
He claimed that he threatened him with a knife. Of course, he didn't have a knife, and you know, how ridiculous. I don't care how stupid you are. You don't face a cop holding a gun on you and threaten to pull a knife.
Or just threatened to pull a knife.
That's all he says. He threatened to pull a knife.
And this guy, this Pinto man, was held in jail for a year and a half and is still in jail.
Still in jail.
Uh huh.
Still in jail. The jury found him not guilty of the terrorist threat, which is the this. They found that he didn't make this threat against the officer.
What was he charged with? He was charged with resisting arrest and a terrorist threat?
Right.
So he resisted an arrest, and the arrest was what for? The original arrest was for what?
A probation violation.
So he was probably guilty of resisting arrest insofar as he ran away from the officer?
Well, in California, that's not true. In California, if an officer uses excessive force in the course of arresting someone, then it is not a lawful arrest by definition, and therefore he cannot be found guilty of resisting an unlawful arrest.
Yet the jury, though it dismissed the fact that it said that it wasn't guilty of terrorist threats, but they claimed that he was guilty of resisting arrest.
And I think it was because they were confused. I don't think they understood. I think they looked at this as two separate incidents.
This what judge did actually reviewed this, or was the judge in this case?
the second prosecutor in the case actually,
yes.
was Judge Danner.
You mean former DA, now Judge Art Danner? Yes.
Yeah, and he of course hired the prosecutor Jeff Rozell.
So he had previously, before when he was district attorney, hired that guy. He didn't disqualify himself from the case.
No, of course not, no. And this was his little golden boy when he hired him, so...
Of course, I guess he would have to disqualify himself from a lot of cases
exactly.
As a judge.
Exactly, yeah.
We used to call him Drumhead Danner in the street shit sheet.
It's really pathetic what's going on. I mean, you know, the prosecutor, Jeff Rozell, tried to argue... or not argue, actually tried to tell a judge that by finding him not guilty of the terrorist threat, that they didn't really find that the officer was lying, which, you know, is absolutely ridiculous. Of course they found that he lied. Their scientific expert found that he lied. He claimed that they were at close range. The evidence showed that they were not at close range.
Well, maybe the deputy just needed glasses.
Mm-hmm.
He had bad perspective.
Maybe
he meant to say that, relatively speaking, they were at close range.
Yeah.
I mean, relative to the planets.
Well, the thing is, there was one other issue in this case, and that is that Jason Nielsen on the stand...
That's the deputy who...
Right.
Who apparently lied about this issue?
The sheriff.
Now, are you stating this deputy lied? You're going to stand up before the...
I will stand by that, and I'm actually calling for them to prosecute, the DA's office to prosecute him for perjury.
Now, wait a minute. Now, aren't you then amenable under this, if you file a complaint against this officer, isn't this a false complaint? Aren't you, in fact, vulnerable to a misdemeanor charge?
Well, I surely am, but then we also know for a fact that he got up on the stand and lied. The defense attorney for Osvaldo Pinto asked him on the stand whether or not he'd ever had a complaint filed against him, to which he replied categorically, no. I filed a complaint against him. Richard Quigley filed a complaint against him. So, you know, he of course, just lied.
Well, now, wait a minute. Didn't the judge confirm that there were no complaints against Deputy, what's his name, Nielsen?
Well, he initially did.
So are you claiming that Judge Danner is involved in some kind of collusive conspiracy to thwart justice? Certainly you can't mean that against one of our more distinguished judges.
Well, let me explain to you what happens in a pitches motion. In a pitches motion, you're entitled to ask for any complaints against an officer that have been made that are relevant to the to your current complaint, which, of course, in this case, would be lying in the police report. The defense attorney did a pitches motion.
And the judge then, in camera, goes and reviews all the old complaints, right?
Exactly. The
in
judge
secret.
Takes the complaints in his chambers and reviews them and then comes out and says, well, you know, there's this complaint or whatever. In this situation, Judge Danner reviewed them in his chambers and came out onto the bench and said categorically, he said, clean as a whistle, not a complaint there.
Huh.
And it just was serendipitous that I had called Bill Minkner ahead of time and told him that I had filed a complaint. That then, of course, Bill said, well, but Your Honor, I know of at least two complaints. At which point, Judge Danner went back into chambers.
Perhaps this time he had his glasses with him.
Looked at the file and said, oh, came back out and said, oh, I just must have overlooked them.
They slipped through the cracks. Yeah. So the judge, you were helping the judge do his job. I commend you and Bill Minkner. But then, didn't something else happen to further cloud the issue? Weren't two more complaints suddenly?
Oh, well, they were actually declarations that were filed in support of our complaints. And they were filed by completely objective bystanders.
Before you get to that, what happened to those? Weren't the two complaints that were made siphoned off into a strange dead file off in the boonies? That, I mean, normally police officers against whom complaints are filed each has a file and you look for the complaint, but they don't take the name of the person filing the complaint and make a special file, which apparently they did in this case, Richard Quigley. Really.
Well, you know, that depends on who you ask. If you ask Judge Danner, he will tell you that those two declarations were not in Jason Nielsen's internal affairs file. They were in Richard Quigley's internal affairs file.
Richard,
now,
I didn't know Richard.
But now it's time for Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the Sunday edition.